Good morning.
Greetings.
Hey,
Hey.
happy Sunday.
Happy April 1st.
April 1st or Easter.
Yeah. It's April Fool's Day and Easter.
At the same time.
So that mean when Jesus comes out of the grave, he says, "Psych, just
Psych,
kidding."
just kidding.
Goes back in.
It could be.
Maybe.
Anything could happen on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, April Fool's Day is pretty annoying, actually.
Yeah. It's not, it's a no, more annoying if you don't, you're not aware of it.
Yeah. I didn't
But
think of it until a few
everything
minutes
is
ago.
fake news.
Yeah. Every day is April Fool's Day in America.
That's right. So Rob is celebrating Easter, I believe,
Yeah.
with his family. Not his comic family, but his family family.
His blood family.
And this isn't even a retro week, but Bill Bomer's out this week too. So I thought, what the heck? Let's try to get something recorded.
The podcasters without small children are podcasting.
Are not hiding Easter eggs.
Without small human children, anyway.
Yeah.
My doggy daughter is here on the futon with me. I was exercising this morning, and I was exercising in the same room that most of her toys are.
Yeah.
And I do get down on the floor and play with her toys sometimes, so.
After exercising or before or
No,
just
just at
in
other times.
general, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll be exercising, I'll do like something on the floor, like floor stretches or something like that, and she'll grab her toys and start dropping her toys on top of me and squeaking them in my face, and it's just pretty it's
Yeah, when I get on the
that's her way of
elliptical
helping me.
and Barb isn't around, she likes to headbutt my legs. I don't know why she does that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll ride the exercise bike sometimes, and I have to tell her, "You're getting too close. You're gonna get hit in the head with
Yeah,
your."
I don't know. She wants to go after my legs.
Yeah. Silly. But
Barb
so
needs my
no.
assistance. She's making
That's.
biscuits. What am I doing?
Get the spoon.
A
That's
spoon.
not the whole thing, not a whole lot. No, not that much. Less.
Yeah.
Less. You're just gonna sprinkle some on
That's
your
like
hands.
not oh, on your hands.
Okay, you're good.
I didn't know the cookbook said to put flour on your hands.
It's so I don't get the dust on my fingers.
Chrissy Teigen cookbook says put flour on your hands when you're making biscuits and gravy.
Oh, so that you can
That's
knead
our
the dough.
Easter meal. We're eating some biscuits and gravy today.
Oh.
I found it challenging to find good biscuits and gravy.
Out in the world, you mean?
Yeah, just in general. I mean, I can find okay biscuits and gravy, but ever since when we went to UNM, there was like the engineering building we used to hang out at, and there was like this little place we could get breakfast, and they had biscuits and gravy, and it was the best. They had the best breakfast in general with everything. And ever since I've had that, we've been chasing a good biscuits and gravy recipe or at restaurants. We always try it.
And
Always
it's yet
fall
to find
short.
one, huh?
Yeah.
So this is the latest attempt.
This is the latest attempt.
Barb's really into that Chrissy Teigen recipes, huh?
Yeah.
She seems to be using a lot of
There was one that I think you could eat. It was a tuna fish casserole type thing. I don't think there was anything in there that. Yeah, jalapeno cheesy tuna casserole. It was good.
Yeah, that sounds good actually.
Yeah, it was spicy.
I like tuna and I like jalapenos.
Yeah.
Coconut rice.
And coconut rice. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Nice. Yeah. What had Chrissy Teigen been known for cooking at before doing this
Modeling
cookbook?
or
Or, I mean, I know she's known for other stuff, but had she had any connection to cooking prior to doing this cookbook?
I don't know. I think her husband, when she got married, she decided to do cookbook.
Oh.
I don't know if she's always liked cooking.
She's married to John
She's
Legend,
all
right?
yeah, she's always liked cooking, Barb said.
Oh.
Her mom taught her stuff.
I see.
Oh, her mom's from what? Thailand. Barb knows everything. This is welcome to the Chrissy Teigen podcast, fan podcast.
It's a subset, or it's a new podcast on the crap, I screw up my joke, but I was trying to remember the name that of that man that she loves.
Oh, I don't even know who that guy name is. Alcide. I
He
know, I
must
know,
block it out then or something.
I know his name in True Blood, but I don't know his real name. Joe Magnolello.
That's right.
On the Joe Magnoletto bird feed.
Yeah. That's a very diverse podcast to
Yeah.
talk about eagles and Joe Maniello's abs
Yeah, Deathstroke.
and pecs.
I wonder if they'll ever make that.
Actually, that could be the name. It could be the peck cast, because birds peck at bird seeds, and he has pecs.
Yeah, I was reading Tom Strong today, and I never realized this, but most viruses are transferred via birds.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I believe everything comics say, because that's
Like
where the truth is.
the avian bird flu.
Yeah. Well, almost every virus, they said, can be traced to a bird. I don't know if it's because they move fast, in air, and they can bring it. I don't know. I'd have to do more research.
Birds can bring it.
But Tom Strong's a smart dude, man. He's got a high level intelligence.
I guess we probably should just exterminate them all then.
Yeah. No, because then you'd have all kinds of other problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not for the extermination of
I just
birds.
wish we'd have a hawk just to decrease the rabbit population over here, just slightly.
Oh yeah, you've got a lot of rabbits.
Yeah, a lot of rabbits. We've had a
And
hawk show up once, but he doesn't hang out. He should hang out.
your dog doesn't care.
She doesn't care about the rabbits at all. A matter of fact, there was a rabbit in the yard and she just walks out there. She doesn't even chase it. They don't even like mind her anymore. Like they'll be like by the trees and stuff and they just let her out there. They don't even they're like, that's Harley, we don't care.
Yeah, Mabel is pretty dangerous to rabbits. She's killed one already.
Oh, nice. We'd bring her over here.
Yeah.
Teach Harley.
She hasn't caught a squirrel that she's tried to catch squirrels, but she hasn't got one of those.
She doesn't even do chase birds or anything. The only bird she doesn't like for some reason, and I can't figure it out, is robins. She doesn't like robins. And they're not bird feeder birds. They'll eat worms and stuff in the yard. So I don't know what she's got against robins, but it's the only thing that she's ever chased.
She just prefers Batman solo, I guess.
Yeah, she says, he's mine. He's all mine.
I'm Batman's sidekick, not you.
Yeah. So I almost read for this podcast, I almost read the Bible. I have the Treasury Size Edition from DC
Oh.
Comics, but I decided I didn't have time.
Yeah, the Bible's pretty long.
Yeah.
It'd be impressive to hear you summarize,
Well, it's
though.
got like Joe Kubert and everything in there and art. I like it.
Yeah, I have heard actually that it's got good art.
Yeah, I've never read it either. I bought it like I think 4 conventions ago or 3 conventions ago and haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, I've never read the com I've read the actual Bible, but I haven't read the comic book Bible.
I've never read the Bible cover to cover. I've only read sections.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if I've read the entire thing. There's some pretty boring parts.
Yeah.
These, how appropriate, we're talking about the Bible on Easter.
Easter.
But yeah, last time you were absent, so we had Ronnie from Nerdy Legion on to join us. Did you like how professional he was, that he actually was doing a backup recording before we even asked him to?
Yeah, I liked it. That's what I like. I always like to have a backup, especially ever since I've lost my Pretty May, or I think that's the one I used to use. I don't trust this other one. Like, I have to test it over and over again because sometimes it will get my audio but not yours. And so I mean, I even told Barb before the recording, I did like 10 tests before I got it. I don't know why, it just doesn't sync up.
What one are you using now?
I'm using the MP3 recorder.
Yeah, MP3 Skype recorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm using too.
I haven't updated it yet, though. Maybe that's. I mean, I've updated it about a month ago because I couldn't get it to work, and then it says there's a new update. Maybe it'll help with this problem that I have.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm not happy with these headsets. Ever since Harley destroyed, like I had a good pair of wireless headsets. Like they worked really good. And she just tore them apart. And I haven't been able to find a pair that worked the way I like it.
You're not able to get the same ones again, or?
No, 'cause it was an older version. I can get the
Yeah.
same brand, but for
Right.
some reason it just doesn't work. They don't work as well with my computer as the old one did.
Yeah. That's
The
annoying.
volumes are a little off, especially on my end. Like if I record with somebody else, my volume's always lower than other people's. But that's not the true. Like if Daryl records something, then I'm louder. It's very weird. And I always do mono because if I deal in stereo, I've always had problems editing it, and I'm lazy, so. Because if I did it in stereo, then I can boost just my stuff and leave everybody else's volume the same.
Yeah, that's can be a bit of a pain, though.
Yeah.
More work. More unpaid work. Yeah, religion, I find religious history really interesting. Just cause, I mean, because so it affects our world so much still, you know.
Yeah, I even like religious horror. Like that scares me. Like there's not too many things that scare me, but when you have like possession and stuff, that frightens me.
Yeah, I think religious horror works pretty good sometimes because, especially as a motivation, because you've seen cults and stuff like that, how people can do some pretty horrible things in the name of religion.
Yeah.
So I find it pretty believable as a motivation.
Sacrificing and all kinds of stuff. There's crazy stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting.
But I didn't read anything about religion or cult to this time.
No, me neither.
I thought about it. Like I was like, should I go try to find my Treasury Edition? But I knew I didn't have time. 'Cause we went to the movies yesterday. We went to go see Pacific Rim. the new one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why, but I don't feel like seeing Ready Player One. It's just like, oh no, Harley's doing her crazy eyes. Well, that's because she's going to eat. Did you see that? That was weird. She's a strange one. But that's like a virtual reality type thing in the post-apocalyptic world, it looks like.
Yeah.
And it's real popular because most of the people that I know have read the book.
Right.
And it looks like something that's right in my alley, and I don't know why, but I just don't feel like seeing it.
Yeah, I'm not super interested in it or the book. I mean, I've kind of heard that it's people like that it has a lot of 80s references, but otherwise it sounds like it's kind of shallow.
Yeah.
Well, it does sound like the movie's better than the book, actually.
Yeah, but I haven't even seen the, what is it called, Strange Places or Stranger Things?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that's supposed to be like a love letter to the 80s.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We've watched both seasons of that, and I think it's pretty good. You'd probably dig that.
Yeah, so I watch so little TV. I had so much things like I wanted to do for this podcast, but I just didn't have time. I was like, you know what I should do? I bought the complete series of The Addams Family, so I was going to watch a couple episodes of that. And then I said, well, why don't I start 6 million? I just don't have time. And in the time that I do have, I have to watch a program just to free up the DVR so it can record enough for the next week.
Yeah.
It is so full. We're like at 5% on average a week. And Barb catches us up like every Friday or Saturday night. She'll catch us up so we at least have 6%. And then I don't do my job. I have a lot of like DC stories on there that I need to catch up, and I'm barely entering the Crisis. You know how that had that that crossover that was called Crisis on Infinite Earths or something like that, with Arrow and Supergirl and everything.
Oh yeah, vaguely.
I am barely there. Like I'm almost to get there. I have 3 episodes of Legends of Tomorrow to read or to watch. But I do want to watch that Lost in Space because, man, I used to love Lost in Space as a kid. I used to love it. So I'm real curious of. I like the idea of having Swiss Family Robinson in space.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't try to keep up with anything anymore, honestly. I mean, most time if I watch something, I watch just stuff that's already completed. We don't have DVR.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll just watch shows through Netflix or Prime or whatever. And well, there's a few shows that Kara and I watch together, so we'll keep up on those. But they're usually like HBO or something with a shortened season. So it's only 10 episodes or something like that once a year, and maybe even longer than once a year. So besides that, I just occasionally I'll slowly work my way through a show.
I feel the same way about comics though too. Like I don't feel like I need to keep caught up. You know how a lot of people, this is what's coming out this week.
Yeah.
Very seldom am I reading something that's come out this week. It has to be like something really, really special because my mood changes so much. Like I'm barely reading Titans Hunt right now. I started reading that this morning, and I just finished Tom Strong when it went to the Vertigo, not when it was Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
But when it went to the Vertigo series, I finished that. That world is fun, man. It is so fun. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's worth it.
Tom Strong?
Yeah.
I read a little bit back when Alan Moore was actually doing the whole ABC line.
Yeah.
My favorite was Top 10.
I haven't. I really that's liked that. That seems to be like Daryl's favorite. Everybody that talks about that seems to be their favorite. I've never read Top 10. I've read Tom Strong. I'm not literate in the ABC universe. I think I've read Tom Strong and a little bit of Promethea, and that's it. And I don't even have, you know how I'm a completist? I don't even have most of it.
Yeah, Top 10 was really good. I read a little bit of Tom Strong, and I read a little bit of the anthology book that had several different stories in it.
Yeah.
Obviously, because it's an anthology. I didn't really. Promethea always looked interesting to me, but I never got around to reading it. But Top 10 was really cool. Police procedural, but just really weird. And there's always so much going on. It's a good book to take your time and read slowly, because each panel had stuff going on in the background. And just, I think the scripts for those must have been super detailed.
Yeah.
Alan Moore scripts, like he's known to do. So
I think I like I like Tom Strong because it reminds me of Doc Savage. Like it's the same. I like the pulp, and it's sort of like that. Like
yeah,
it has elements of it.
So that's definitely what it's inspired by.
Yeah. So I like navigate towards that just because it's in my wheelhouse. But I need to read Top 10 at some point. I would like to get that dead universe. Even they're making a comeback now, but like Prometheus and Justice League, Tom Strong just showed up in the Terrifics. So I'd like to have that, or at least try it again.
Yeah, you should.
But what book do you have for us? I'm curious to see what you picked.
I went pretty conservative with my choices, and as far as my tendencies go, for the show, and I read pretty much all 60s Marvel stuff. But should I start with the best?
It's a good start in the middle.
Start with my middle favorite.
Yeah, your middle favorite.
All right, let's see. Well, that would be, I think that'll be Avengers 17 then. That was my middle favorite, and this is actually so 16 is the first issue that they Cap starts leading the new team with Hawkeye, Quicksilver, and Scarlet Witch.
Yeah,
and so this is. And I can't remember. I read that several months ago, and I don't know if I had read it previously or if I just was aware for a super long time that of the issue and of the fact that the team changed. But I know I haven't read any of the issues beyond that with the team, so that was very interesting aspect of reading this issue 17, which is called Four Against the Minotaur.
I think we covered 16 on this one. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think we've.
It's not,
if I didn't talk about it, I think you might have talked about it.
It's pretty fresh in my memory.
Yeah. I think you might have talked about it. But it's interesting to see the team actually try to operate as a team. It starts out with their first meeting, and Hawkeye's a real jackass. He's real super cocky, it's clear that he's not used to taking orders and has a problem with Captain America just assuming that he's going to be the leader of the team. But Captain America's, not having it really. He's got the personality to deal with a difficult person like Hawkeye. But interestingly, their first activity is to try to seek out the Hulk, which I wasn't aware of and was an interesting surprise, that Cap actually feels like they need the Hulk's strength on the team.
I would not want that just because he's so uncontrollable. As a leader, I'd be so worried that he'd kill somebody accidentally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I guess at this time in the Marvel universe, it's kind of slim pickings. You know, there just aren't as many aren't as many heroes around, and Thor quit.
They
everybody
quit
else
because
is busy.
They were exhausted too. It was like, hey, we're tired. We just want to leave.
Yeah,
sabbatical kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. So,
but the other thing that's real fascinating about it is that I can't think of an earlier time, maybe you can, in DC or Marvel, where they put a bunch of villains on a team, like a superhero team.
Yeah, I try to put myself in that mindset while I was reading this, you know, try to forget as much of the history of these characters as I could, you know, just to try to feel like what it was like at the time. And it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy move. It automatically feels like, having fairly recently, at least over the last several years, read the 16 issues prior to this, it definitely feels very different, you know. And Captain America, it's interesting that Captain America is the one in charge, because he wasn't on the team when it started, you know.
Right.
Only for a few issues, of course, but still.
But
so,
you know,
yeah,
you know what? And it makes sort of sense that he would be the one that would allow it to happen. Mm-hmm. Because of, you know, just what he represents, hope and stuff, and belief in people in general.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That if anybody would allow this, he would be the one.
Yeah, and if anyone has the leadership skills to rein in a team like this, I think that's probably one of the most interesting aspects of it. And, you know, Stan and this is actually, I didn't mention that this is actually Don Heck with inks by Dick Ayers. They do a good job of displaying that in this issue, Captain America's leadership abilities. After they go through a training session and kind of like a, Cap calls it a playroom, but they think that the training session's over, and a large green robot busts through the wall, bringing a message about the Hulk. So the robot attacks them, even as it's giving them this message about the Hulk, and the team has to destroy the robot, but it's still putting out this message that that they'll find Hulk in the desert. It's at this point that we see who's behind the robot. It's the Mole Man, who has sent out this robot as a way to try to draw out the Avengers. Somehow he's gotten, well, I think it was publicly made known that the Avengers had the new members, so it makes sense that, you know, pretty much anybody that wants to know knows. And so he's wanting to take advantage of them being potentially vulnerable at this point. I'm glad that they address the fact that the robot says that that Hulk's in the desert, which is not very specific. They don't get hugely more specific, but Hawkeye does say, you know, the desert's a pretty big place. How do you know where to look? And Cap explains that he's going off of a hunch, and that he's going to go to where, in Avengers issue 5, the Hulk helped them fight the Lava Men.
I actually own that issue.
Oh
And
yeah.
it's really good shape, except it has hole punches in it. So I bought it for cheap because I guess back in
That's
that
pretty good
time,
though.
a lot of people would hole punch and put them in a binder.
Man.
I guess that
Yeah.
was a fad once because there, a lot of times you can buy cheap older books if they have hole punches because it makes them not very valuable.
Yeah. That's not bad though, really.
Yeah, it's not too, it's not distracting in terms of story, you know.
Right. Yeah. I find it interesting that they land their plane in such a way that they're not tracked by the radar of a nearby missile base. And it's not clear who's talking. Well, Cap must be saying that he's doing that, and then maybe it's Hawkeye that's responding, but he said they just waste our time with a lot of red tape. So I thought it was kind of funny that they're just avoiding the military instead of, going through the rigmarole. But so anyway, it turns out to be a trap of the Mole Man. The Hulk isn't there, and we've actually had some panels prior to this that show us from the continuity at this time is really super tight. So the current issue of Tales to Astonish, which is Hulk and Giant Man at this time, the Hulk is actually trapped by the leader, which I think is like the first, that issue's not the first leader, but it's the first, I think, leader storyline that that's involved with.
What do you mean by that? It's not the guy with the big head?
No, I mean, I think the storyline started in the. I mean, it's not the first appearance of the leader,
Oh, okay.
but I think,
I
like,
thought
maybe
it
they.
might have been some other character that wasn't the leader.
No, I mean, that I think
It's
it's the
the
issue prior.
gamma radiated brain dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just mean, it's. I think it was the issue prior to that that the story started in. But, when the trap is sprung, they all start falling down this huge pit. I thought it was kind of funny that Quicksilver says that his speed is useless because he's airborne. I think nowadays they, I think Stan's assumption there is that his speed's not working because he can't contact a surface. But I don't think that would stop modern day writers from having him just kind of speed, uses speed in the air. But the main point of the sequence is kind of to, Cap gives Hawkeye an instruction to use a suction-tipped arrow, so they could all grab a hold of the rope connected to it, and it's kind of a moment of Hawkeye getting further impressed with Cap's ability to like think in danger and think in the heat of the moment and stuff, whereas he hadn't thought of that yet. So as advertised, they once they're in the Mole Man's base, they encounter this Minotaur, and have to fight it. The Minotaur itself is, not super interesting, but they also encounter some of the Mole Man's mole people, and Quicksilver actually encounters some of them on his own. He gets trapped by a rock fall, a rock slide that separates him from the rest of the group. So he has to he's goes up against some mole people, but one of them has a gas gun that knocks him out, and so they're able to abduct him and bring him before the Mole Man. The other three, they run into the Minotaur again, and Cap gets a chance to show off some more of his tactical abilities. He slices, I mean, because this Minotaur is really, it's really huge. I mean, Minotaurs have sort of varied in their depiction. This one is a giant, really. They're probably up to its kneecaps. And he uses his shield to to slice through some rock over top of the Minotaur's head, and it's really just used as a distraction. When it he puts himself in such a position that the Minotaur, when it turns back from the rock that hit it, tries to headbutt Cap, and he dodges in such a way that it headbutts the wall. And then he instructs Wanda to use her hex power. And it's kind of interesting that the Minotaur ends up stuck with its horns in the rock. They discuss the fact that its horns are stuck so deeply that if it does manage to pull itself free, the horns will stay stuck in the rock. And Wanda comments that without its horns, death would quickly follow. So basically it's stuck there. It's either stuck there or it's dead, and they just walk away and leave it there. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they were a little just like callous about that, but I guess they just treated it as a monster. They make it to the Mole Man's base area, the three of them, and they're starting to show their teamwork a bit better, with Hawkeye freeing Quicksilver from the machine that the Mole Man has him in. But the Mole Man escapes. He's got like this enclosure that he traps them in, and it sends them back to the surface. So they're kind of... their mission is kind of unsuccessful, really. I mean, they didn't find the Hulk. We're shown again what's actually going on with the Hulk and Bruce Banner being knocked out and on a cliffhanger, same cliffhanger that Tales of Astonish issue ends with. They comment on the fact that the mission was successful in terms of them finding their ability to work together as a team, but they still give us a little bit of a cliffhanger in the fact that Cap is thinking to himself that they're happy together as a team because things went well, they were successful in terms of working together and escaping and stuff, but he wonders what will happen when they have a real setback. But yeah, the conflict wasn't really super interesting, but it was interesting to see Cap as a leader and see how he deals with this team of three sort of criminals, former criminals or whatever.
Yeah, that's cool. I don't think that one doesn't sound familiar to me. Mm-hmm. I may have read it, but I don't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll start with my medium, my book that's in the middle too. And I didn't even know when I read it, the history of this until just right now. And it's kind of ironic because it's one of my favorite things about DC Comics is their acquisition of a couple of companies. But This is actually a quality comic that became a DC comic. In the first DC publication of it was in issue 47, and I'm going to cover issue 60, which is my oldest romance comic. It's from like 1959, and it smells crazy like newsprint. Like, it's really strong and it makes me sneeze. It smells great, it just makes me sneeze. But this was a quality book up to 47, and DC acquired Quality, which had Plastic Man, is probably the most well known. It had all of the Freedom Fighters characters, which I've been trying to buy a lot of in the Golden Age. It had a GI Combat. There's some that might surprise you. It had Blackhawk. So a lot of their military comics, and I guess romance, I never had a clue. I lost track of what I was thinking because Barb threw the biscuits in front of me. But this is my oldest. I didn't know it was a Quality comic. I didn't know Quality had romance comics. Even though I have their history book, I think it's more focused on the heroes rather than what the romance comics were. And it doesn't say like National DC Group, it just says National Romance Group. And the other thing that's odd is there's no ads in the entire book. There's only one ad for itself at the back. It says, here we have all these love comics and girls' love stories, secret hearts, girls' romances, falling in love, and heart throbs. Those I have some because I've went on a romance comic binge and bought, I don't know, about 50 of them just recently. This one comes from a collection. And this guy must have loved his romance comics because he would grade every book and write it on the back, and then he would put them all in like the Mylar. This one's in bad shape. This one's in good condition. This tables are attached, but it has a hole in the front cover. And it has a thing on, it has a girl looking at another girl and says, "You're wasting your time, honey. He's going to be with me." What I found was really fascinating is there is a big difference between 50s and 60s. Like, I've read a lot of 60s and 70s romance comics, but 50s was very, very different. I think this is the first time I've read. The first one's a very strange story. I don't even know if I could explain it very well, but this guy does like musical plays and he's a womanizer and he finally meets a girl, but I don't get the complete sense that he's not going to keep up his womanizing at the end of it. It's very strange. The second story is, and I don't know who wrote these or who drew them. I have no clue. There's no credits. There's not. I haven't even been able to find the credits in my database. The second story was my favorite. It's called Guilty Heart. It's so freaking bizarre. These two friends are at a pool, and one of the girls dares her boyfriend or fiance to dive off the high dive. You know, but no big deal. It's not like you're diving off a mountain. You're just diving in a pool off the high dive. And she dares her boyfriend. She says, "You know, Pam, don't make him. He's gonna hurt himself." And he said, "I just dared him. It's gonna be fun." And well, he dies off the high dive. So he hits the water. It doesn't say how he dies, but he dies. It shows his hand coming out of the water, and he's pretty much dead. So she has this guilt, like I dared her fiance to dive off the high dive, and now he's dead. So several years later, they're starting to get over it. They're friends again, and she falls in love with some guy, like this guy that's a reporter, and she's, "Man, this guy's great." So, being the friend that she is, this is fucked up. Being the friend that she is, she sets up her friend with the guy she's in love with and says, "Well, I'll make a sacrifice because I feel guilty." Okay,
Oh,
so yeah,
jeez.
she makes the sacrifice.
That's gonna go well.
Oh, it turns into even more disaster. So, they fall in love, and now she's engaged again. Okay, cut to a year or two later. She's invited to a pool party. And they're engaged. She knows she's engaged, but she's still in love with the guy. She's still in love with the guy. And she sees the guy diving off the high dive, and she goes into a freak out. Like, she freaks out. "Don't dive, don't dive, you'll kill yourself." And he dives and he's fine, but she passes out, she blacks out and wakes up, and she's go when he she wakes up, he's holding her, and she goes, "I love you." And he goes, "You know what? I love you too." And then he's like, "Well, what about so and so?" "Oh, she'll understand. We both love each other." But they're engaged. Talk about a friend. She killed her other boyfriend, and now she steals the she st stole him twice.
Oh my goodness.
Awful. It's terrible.
It's not a good friend to have.
Yeah, it's not a good friend to have. And then the other story is sort of similar. It's about a girl that works at one of those bridal places, like setting up the wedding and putting the dresses together, and but she doesn't have a man. So she is jealous of every woman that comes in there. Like she, it's almost like she hates her job. And one day some girl comes in there and she actually bonds with her, but falls in love with her fiance. But it turns out it's not her fiance. So she has this guilt about her the whole time. Like she even, the girl asked her, well, pick out what wedding dress you would want. So she's like, when she's getting married, she's like, that should be me up there. But then she finds out the guy she's marrying is not the guy that she thought he was. It's her brother. So she fell in love with her brother. So it kind of has a happy ending. And the other
That's
one is
probably good
about,
after the other one.
the other one's about two sisters, which has not a good ending either, but she's like the black sheep of the family, even though they don't draw her like she's ugly or anything. They portray her like she's the ugly duckling. And the boyfriend comes over. The sister has the measles, which is very strange because she caught the measles all of a sudden at her friend's house, and they say, you have to stay quarantined at your friend's house for weeks. Why would you not go home? Because you have the measles. You're going to stay at your friend's house quarantined and get everybody else the measles. But she's quarantined for weeks, so they're saying you have to entertain her boyfriend. So she falls in love with her sister's boyfriend, and her sister comes back healthy, and she takes the boy away from her again. It ends up happy, but the sisters are at each other's throats now. So it's very, I don't know like what it's trying to teach girls or what, but man, the way I read it doesn't teach them to be like ethically sound. Like it teaches them to steal the man if you have to steal the man. Like it, there's no like girl loyalty in this at all. It's all about getting the man. So that was a very interesting comic, and I'm glad that I read it now, especially because I'm on a quality kick. So I didn't even coincidentally know it was a quality comic until just 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting.
The pool one was awful, though. She stole the man twice.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
One through death. It's awful.
Man, when I was a kid, I used to encourage people. No, I used to go swimming at my next door neighbor's pool a lot, and they didn't have a high dive, naturally. They just had they, but they did have a diving board, one of those ones that's just real low to the ground, that you just kind of jump off into the deep end. But we were trying to do
It's
flip.
one. It's like 2 feet off the ground, right? So you
Yeah.
could actually dive, but it's a board you can bounce on, right?
Yeah, you could bounce a little bit. But it's not far off the ground. But I tried doing a backflip off of it, and I did go around, but I hit my head on the bottom of the diving board. So I actually
Wow.
went around and hit my head underneath the diving board, but I was okay. But it scared the hell out of my neighbor.
Well, I bet.
But yeah, I was just kind of shaken up. My head hurt a little bit,
You try to go
but I was okay.
backwards. You try to do a backflip and hit your head on the board. Wow.
Well, on like the underside of the board, so I kind of went around and
Were you engaged at the time? Did somebody dare you?
Well, I thought you meant for a second, was I engaged to be married?
Well, that's what I meant. Were you engaged just like in the comic book?
Oh, yeah, okay, I get it now. Jeez. I'm a little slow this morning, I guess.
Yeah.
No, no one was No one was competing for my love that I know of. But yeah, that was a little scary.
Some girl dared you. I want you to do a backflip.
Yeah. I don't know. I was pretty young. I don't know how susceptible I was to the dares of the fair sex at that time.
Yeah.
Although I did have a girlfriend in first grade.
A girlfriend? Did you kiss her?
No.
It was just a friend.
Yeah, it was really just a friend, you know, but you, like, call your girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
But it's just innocent friendship.
We had a girlfriend, too. We never did anything with her, but we did play, like, army, like, where we'd have guns, and she'd always be the nurse.
By we, you mean you and your brother?
No, it was me and my best friend.
Oh, me, okay, so.
Yeah, we used to collect Sergeant Rock comics back in the day, so we'd do a lot of, like, role play of, like, Sergeant Rock and Easy Company.
And it was so it was a love triangle.
Yeah, it was a love triangle back in the day. One of us would always get shot up and then she'd have to nurse us back to health. Romance comics.
So you could
either go higher or lower, like the price is right now.
Yeah, what I was gonna ask you what I gotta ask the audience. What is the audience going over?
Is it higher or lower?
I'll go to lower.
Okay, save the best for last.
Yeah, but not a lot lower. Not a lot lower. Not as low as I thought I might. This issue sort of became infamous later on. It's Daredevil number 8, and it is in the battle of the century, Daredevil must contend with the villainous might of Stilt Man. So I know that I think it was Bendis that kind of made fun of this character later on, and Stilt Man is pretty dumb, but it is
he's one of those guys that everybody makes fun of. Like, he's right there. He'll be in She-Hulk, or he'll show up, and he's, like, ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he is a joke. And understandably so. But this comic is not bad. First of all, I mean, it's drawn by... it's got art by Wally Wood. And it's called The Stilt Man Cometh. It is amusing how hard Stan is trying to make the Stilt Man seem menacing, but it starts off with Daredevil saving a woman who's in the path of a runaway car, so he gets her out of the way and then jumps behind the wheel of a car. So you got a blind man driving, but of course he's no ordinary blind man. But not only is the brake pedal cut, his radar senses detect a time bomb hidden in the mortar. While this is going on, Stilt Man makes his first appearance, and on his stilts, which, you know, are actually mechanical telescoping legs that rise up, he is face to face with an army helicopter, and it's not an army helicopter. It's a payroll helicopter. Like, it's the equivalent of like an armored car, but in the sky. They're of course ironically discussing how they're
Do they exist? Do they really exist?
Beats me. But it's funny that they're talking about the fact that they haven't been robbed like they used to be. Now that they're using Whirlybird to deliver their payrolls, so of course at that moment is when Stiltman shows up in front of them and uses a grenade to cover the window of the Whirlybird and takes their money. So back to Daredevil, he deals with the runaway car. He gets it to the docks and lets it explode over the water and just makes it out at the last second. But he correctly assumes that it must have been a distraction, that there must be something going on in a different part of town. So, you know, nowadays, Daredevil's senses are so strong that he doesn't really need to rely upon any other equipment, but he actually uses a microphone in his billy club, and we actually have a panel that shows, like they used to like to do back in the day, a panel that shows the interior of his billy club cane. It's got like a retractable microphone, transistor and batteries, a miniature tape recorder. It shows the spring cable and the hinge and a chamber for projectiles and gas pellets. But so he actually uses that to amplify his senses, and he hears a bunch of random stuff, but he also hears somebody talking about a man walking over top of a building. So it doesn't take Daredevil long to spot Stiltman at that point. But very soon afterwards, he seems to just completely disappear. And Daredevil's not really sure why. So he's lost the trail, so he goes back to the office as Matt Murdock. At this time, him and Karen have confessed their feelings for each other. But Foggy doesn't know about that, and he walks in on them, like, talking close together with Matt has his hands on Karen's face, and it's an awkward situation. Foggy leaves, and another man comes in, a potential client named Wilbur Day, and he tells Matt that his boss stole his invention, and he wants Matt to sue him. Matt calls the guy's boss and to suggest that they settle out of court, and the guy says, "Not a chance, go ahead and sue me." So while Matt is training later, we also see that he's got the inside of his cowl is got all this complex radio receiving in it, and that his horns on his head are twin antennae. Again, it's kind of something that nowadays they don't really bother. They just make his powers powerful enough to do that stuff without any sort of assistance. But he hears stuff about the Stiltman striking again, and he goes off to stop him. Stiltman is robbing a bunch of guests at a penthouse party, like a rooftop party. And that's one of the things that's really kind of silly and funny about Stiltman is that, like, his gimmick isn't really necessary, you know? Like, he obviously, like, it helps him rob the
high
airplane.
High places.
But, like, there's no reason he has to be robbing high places, you know, like it
yeah.
in the first place. So it's just silly, but Daredevil does have some difficulties with him. You know, like he launches himself at one of Stiltman's long legs, and very quickly dashes Daredevil against the wall, and he wasn't prepared for that, apparently. So the next day, he's back at the office, Him and Karen are discussing like the embarrassing moment the day before when their client comes back and Mr. Day, and Day tells them that he thinks that his boss is working on one of the inventions that he stole from him right now, and if they go there to his laboratory, they would probably get enough evidence. Matt tells him, you know, we don't, that's not what we do. We don't trespass on private property without a warrant. But he said, you know, I've been thinking about your case and stuff. And then with his senses, he realizes someone is outside the office listening in. So he says, oh, I think I heard something outside. And he opens up the door and it's the guy's boss. So there's a heated confrontation between the boss and the employee. The boss yells at him, says, you know, I'm not going to let you and this shyster blackmail me. And Matt tries to calm them down and he tries to listen to their heartbeats as they talk to try to figure out which one is lying, but they're standing so close together they can't make out one from the other. So the boss eventually leaves, threatening them. So Mr. Day leaves as well a moment later, and Matt puts on his Daredevil costume and tries to tail boss. And he jumps on the back of his car, but it turns out that this boss, who's supposed to be an inventor but supposedly stole the inventions of his employee, has like a pretty souped up car. He's got an alert that someone is on the car, and he is able to press a button and send an electric shock through the vehicle that knocks Daredevil off. But Stiltman ends up making another appearance, and Daredevil's getting a little better sense at this point as to how the Stiltman suit works, that the legs are hydraulic, that he can move them and shift them up and down. And when he disappeared earlier in the comic, it was just because he shot downward, you know, on the hydraulics and the legs telescope into themselves. Daredevil still has a bit difficulty because he's, you know, he tries to launch himself off of this tower at Stiltman. Stiltman, you know, adjusts his legs so that he's shorter. Daredevil goes flying into the air, has to use his billy club to try to avoid falling, lassos himself onto Stiltman's leg and tries climbing up his leg at Stiltman. But he can make his legs greasy, Matt falls into the Manhattan River. As we get towards the conclusion of the story, Day didn't leave earlier from the meeting, Matt told him wait there, and he gets back to his office, and Day has fallen asleep. So Matt tells him, we're going to go pay a little call to the house of your boss. So they go there, and they find some tubes, some metal tubes in the backyard that look like they might be something. And Matt touches them, and they spring outward, and it looks like they are Stiltman's legs. Just then, the boss appears behind them with a gun, threatening them for intruding on his property. But strangely and kind of surprisingly, at that point, Mr. Day springs forward and karate chops his boss on the side of the neck, and knocks him out with just the one blow. So Matt's pretty surprised at his fighting prowess. So why'd you hit him? He's like, are you serious? He threatened our lives. At this point, you you must know that my boss is Stiltman, but Matt can tell that his pulse rate has changed and that he his senses let him know. Mr. Day at this point still thinks that Daredevil is just an, that Matt's a normal blind man. He's going to he knows that Mr. Day is going to hit him. He doesn't want him to know his secret, so he takes the blow, but he rolls with it, so it doesn't harm him as much. So yeah, the surprise here being that it's actually Mr. Day, the employee that is Stiltman. And so Matt takes the opportunity to put his Daredevil costume on, and pursues after Day, who, it's a pretty amusing image. He puts the stilt legs on, but without the upper part of the costume. So it's just a normal dude in a suit, with the long metal legs. And he also he's the one that's been stealing all the inventions and stuff. His boss did invent the technology for the stilt legs, but he wasn't intending to use them for crimes. And he also takes the opportunity to steal from his house this, it looks like a megaphone. But it's actually like a ray. It's called a molecular condenser, and he uses it to shrink stuff. So he starts firing it at Daredevil, trying to shrink Daredevil. And Matt has to pursue him. Finally catches up with him, and he throws his billy club and manages to pull the condenser out of Stiltman's hands, but it accidentally goes off as Matt is pulling it down towards him. He wasn't intending to shoot it, but it shoots upward at Day, and he starts shrinking downward. And they have a conversation as he shrinks downward past Daredevil. Day slash Stiltman at this point is desperate. He's like, "You gotta help me." He's like, "How?" Daredevil says, "How can I help you? Is if there's some kind of antidote?" And Day is kind of damned by his criminal ways in that he doesn't actually know how the ray works. He just stole it. So he continues to shrink and shrink until he disappears. And Matt thinks, well, nothing completely disappears, but he's so small at this point, I can't see him. He's like the new Adam. So when Matt gets back to his office, the guy's boss is there, and obviously he's really pissed at this point. Matt and Mr. Day trespassed on his property and assaulted him and stole something and et cetera. And Matt's chagrin kind of, tells him, like, I've actually persuaded my client not to press charges. He's not going to sue you. And, he just thinks to himself that it's not actually a lie because Day is definitely not going to be able to sue anybody. And the boss agrees that he'll just let the whole thing go if that's the case and just forget about it all. And then the issue ends with more of the romance drama. This was mentioned earlier in the issue, but Karen really wants Matt to see this particular doctor that says that he can restore Matt's vision. And Matt is scared to do it, but he can't tell her he's scared to lose his powers. So she thinks that he just is avoiding.
He doesn't want to see her.
Yeah. That he's just like using his blindness as a as something to hide behind, so he doesn't have to face responsibilities, and including the responsibility of like a serious commitment to her and stuff. So she lives, or she takes off, and but it looks like, and then it's looks like the next issue he has to confront the idea of the operation. more directly. So all in all, I mean, as silly as Stiltman is, like, it was actually it was a decent issue, and I thought the switcheroo with who was actually Stiltman was pretty well done. Maybe some people would see it coming, but I think they did a good job with, even visually, the boss looks more like a stereotypical villain, and because he is an actual inventor, you know, when there's the sequence with Daredevil trying to trail him on his car, and the fact that he has a car that can emit an electrical charge, maybe it's a little far-fetched like that he would have that. But even so, it does, I think they did a decent job of making him seem like he could be the villain for most of the thing, and they made Mr. Day like seem pretty innocent. So it was actually not a bad issue for having such a silly villain.
He's a silly villain, but if you told me to, on the spur of the moment, say what Daredevil's top 10 rogue villains were, he'd be in it.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, for better or worse. I mean, he's...
Maybe even top 5, like, if you told me. Just like the spur of the moment, I would think of him first.
I mean, I would think
King,
of Bullseye
King,
first.
Kingpin, Bullseye, and... I mean, would definitely be, but like if you start thinking old school, you think Gladiator and Stiltman,
yeah,
the Owl. But yeah, he's pretty interesting. I always get a kick out of it though because of what you said. You know, he's always trying to rob something up high.
Yeah.
Well, I have an advantage. I could be up there. I was eating my biscuits and gravy, obviously. And I think at one time I wasn't mute, so you heard me chewing. But while you were talking about that, I was just curious if there was an armored helicopter, but I couldn't find one. Like one that would carry me, was designed totally to be like Wells Fargo, like a Wells Fargo truck, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this one didn't really look armored, like, I was kind of just sort of describing what their intentions were.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they may have just worked for a company or something like that, like, they were delivering payroll, not, like, gold bars, so.
Yeah.
I may have described it wrong, but.
So I'll do my lowest one, even though my lowest one wasn't the lowest. I mean, they're not bad. None of these are bad. Oh, I had one more question for you. Are you still reading this in order, like in Marvel order?
Yeah, pretty much.
So are these all in the same sort of month or?
Yeah, around the same time, maybe within a couple months.
That's pretty cool.
But they're all really close to each other.
Well, I'm going to talk about Brave and the Bold number 79. And why was it my least favorite? It's because the Dead Man stuff prior to this was much better. I own this, and I owned, I think, all of Strange Adventures, Dead Man, and then everything after that. But I am reading this in a digital because they had a digital sale of Dead Man Book 1, Book 2, Book 3, Book 4, and then everything after that. And I like the Dead Man a lot. I think he would make like a fascinating character because he's like that Quantum Leap type TV character where you could put him in a situation on somebody else's body where he tries to rectify something.
Yeah,
while trying to solve his own murder, you know, at the same time. And these are told when you read them sequentially, they're all, it's always like him in the circus or him trying to find out who the guy with the hook is. And in this Brave and the Bold, it did have Neil Adams artwork. And they continued the same storyline. But it was weird. Matter of fact, I'm gonna have to look to see who wrote it. 79 was written by Bob Haney. So that's where the weirdness came out of it, I think. Because what do they call him? Crazy Haney or whatever.
Yeah, or Zany Haney.
Zany Haney. He did some weird stuff with Commissioner Gordon and Bruce Wayne. Because there's a rich guy who has bought all the newspapers so he could make the newspaper do whatever they want. And he kind of owns, he's also politically like a mayor. So he can make any fake news that he wants. He could do whatever he wants. And Commissioner Gordon and Batman are over the dead body of somebody. And they're trying, hey, get out of my biscuit. Damn it. Harley Quinn. Is she eating my biscuit? Oh, man. Your tongue is long, girl. But anyway, there's a murder, and they're trying to solve it. And this guy comes with his reporters, and he's like, you can't solve it. And Commissioner Gordon thinks it's somebody, and Batman thinks it's somebody else. And they end up fighting kind of thing, like really aggressively. Like, you're going the wrong path. Well, Deadman takes over some bodies and stuff, and he tries to say, I think I know who it is, and it's related to the guy who killed me, because it involves a guy with a hook. So it leads him down the path. It gets really convoluted and weird, because they follow both paths, the Commissioner Gordon's path and Batman's path, and it leads them to the guy with the hook. And the guy with the hook, like, I don't even know what why he would fake having a hook, but he has a hook. Like, why would he even have a hook if he has a regular hand? I have no idea. But he did have a hook, and that's what led Deadman to think he was the killer, except he was like, hey, I know the guy who killed me had his hook on the right hand instead of the left hand, or vice versa. I can't remember what. But, he takes over Batman's body a couple times, and he leaves a message. That's what's really cool. He goes into Bruce Wayne's body, and he's like, this is how he tells Batman what's going on. He's like, I'm Boston Brand. I'm dead. You can't see me, but I'm going to record what's going on. I need you to solve my murder. And at the same time, you'll be solving the murder of who killed the guy on the street. And they're trying to find who the king is. I think that's the name of it. Who the king is. He's a villain. And it turns out to be, it's that rich guy. The rich guy that's manipulating the town and being controlling. And he's turning Batman and Commissioner Gordon against each other. And the killer was hired by somebody. I don't know why he wears a hook. It just bugs me that, Why would he even wear a hook? It seems like he'd be disadvantaged to have the hook instead of use his hand. But he's the guy behind it. They solve the murder, and he's like, sorry, dead man. I don't know what to tell you, but if I ever think of anything or am in the area, I'll help you try to solve your murder. It was very bizarre. But it fit with the current storyline. And during that time, Harley was licking my biscuit. No. That sounds nasty. What do you say? And that's Brave and the Bold, number 79, written in 1968. Oh, this is an interesting factoid. This is the first Neil Adams Batman. I had no idea. And, yeah, that's the first one. And its value in near mint condition is $150. Well, in my conservative database. So, that was called The Track of the Hook. And Neil Adams is also doing The Strange Adventures. So, He was obviously doing Strange Adventures before he came on to Brave and the Bold, and started working there. But the writer of Strange Adventures, I think, did a more emotional job to get you vested in Deadman than this Brave and the Bold did. But Brave and the Bold was like a done in one type story every time. So that is it. Do you have anything else, Chris? Or your best? Are you on mute?
Hello?
There you are.
Okay. Sorry, yes, I have my best. My best was Fantastic Four number 39. And this is actually a pretty, I think this is kind of a famous cover or an iconic Kirby cover. It's A Blind Man Shall Lead Them. And it's got Fantastic Four and Daredevil in the foreground with the New York City behind them and Doctor Doom, like a large Doctor Doom looming over the city. And this is by Stanley and Jack Kirby, of course. And it starts off right from the previous issue, which is where the FF was had gone up against the Frightful Four for the first time. Not sure those were all villains they had faced before, but they band together as the Frightful Four for the first
That's
time.
one of the big books that I want so bad.
The
Is the
Frightful
what?
Four.
Yeah, because that's Medusa's first appearance, I think.
Is it? It's been
What
a little while
issue
since I read it. 38.
38, let me check.
Yeah,
Yep.
you might.
Oh, that's the first appearance of the Trapster.
Oh, okay.
Medusa is around there. She's in 36.
Yeah. Well, I think it's as the Trapster, right? Because he was Paste Pot Pete, and this is where that's
First
where he changes
appearance
his name
as the Trapster. You're
as the
right.
Trapster, yeah. Paste
36
Pot
was
Pete.
the first appearance of Madame Medusa and the Frightful Four. That's why when he said
Oh,
Frightful
okay.
Four, I thought that was Medusa because I knew it was one and the same. Because coincidentally, I was trying to get that book this weekend.
Oh, okay. One of
Because
the
it's the o
auctions.
yeah, it's one of the only. I like the Inhumans a lot. And I own all their first appearances except for Medusa's. So I've always been seeking this book, but never been lucky enough to win it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was thinking that that was the. I know the Frightful Four are obviously fairly new at this point, but wasn't sure. I thought maybe that was the first appearance, the previous issue, but it must have been a couple. I guess it was before that.
I do
So
own
anyway,
39 though, but it's in terrible shape. It's in good condition.
mine is nice and clear because I'm reading it on Marvel Unlimited.
It's nice and crisp.
Yeah.
And you can zoom in.
Yeah. Although I tend not to. I'm not a guided view reader.
That's
I
because you're
like
still in
to.
your 30s. When you get into your 40s and 50s, you'll be there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm close. I'm getting close.
No, 'cause for me, I have to use it sometimes just because I don't know, I'm having a lot of problems with my eyes as far as like I need to get bifocals or progressive lenses, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to go into guided view. If it's during
Yeah.
the day, I'm fine, but like if I'm reading in bed with all the lights turned off, for some reason I have to go to guided view.
Yeah. Do you use any like blue shade or anything like that to like minimize the blue light?
Well, it does have that safety glow, like it has a sensor to detect whether to be light or bright, you know?
Yeah.
So that does happen, but for some reason I start seeing a little blurry. I don't get it yet. I gotta figure out with the eye doctor if I'm gonna need a bifocal or something.
Yeah, maybe.
It sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks because I need good glasses to see far, but they don't help. They make my eyes worse to read. So I have to take them off.
Yeah. Yeah, I might be looking at some bifocals in your future.
Yeah. You will be doing guided view, trust me. You say that now, but unless you're genetically... Let's ask, do your parents have glasses?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm just nearsighted. I mean, I can... Like, my eyes are terrible. But I'm just nearsighted. Like, so I can, you know... Close up is fine, but I have really strong contacts.
Close up was really fine for me up until about a year ago.
Yeah. So I got about a decade to go, so without guided view. I'm not trashing on guided view. I don't tend to use it. But maybe someday I won't have a choice.
In my opinion, it takes away from the experience of the presentation.
Yeah, I just like to know where I'm at on the page, you know, because that's part of the view, you know, how you normally look at a comic. So
the only time I like it is when you have like a psychedelic thing, like in Nick Fury, where it's going like in a circle or doing something weird, and it'll navigate you around the thing correctly.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't know where to go.
Yeah. So, so this picks up after issue 38, which they had gone up against the Frightful Four, and they were, I think, on an island, but wherever they were, there was a nuclear explosion. The Frightful Four escaped, but the Fantastic Four did not. And the only thing that came between them and the explosion was Sue's force field. And so they've been adrift on a life raft in the ocean for 24 hours. And they are rescued by the USS Seahawk as the story opens. So you have Brian Bosworth and Matt Hasselbeck and
the Seahawks. Marshawn
Lynch. And yeah, they're they're pulling them out of the life raft onto the ship, and the sailors are making note of the fact that. You know, they're just wondering, oh man, what could have done this to the Fantastic Four? And they notice that the Thing has reverted to his human form, and they're wondering about that. And eventually, the four of them, they wake up, and the head of the ship, the captain of the ship is talks to Reed and he says, "You guys are safe now." Reed says, "Safe? How can we be safe when we changed so?" He says, "Changed." But the next morning they're eating, the four of them, and a sailor comes over and asks Mr. Fantastic if he could stretch his arm out so he can tell the other sailors he saw him do it. And Ben tells him to beat it. If you're looking for laughs, go tickle yourself. And so once the sailor leaves, they talk about the fact that they've lost their powers. And they don't know what they're going to do about it. When they get back home, Reed starts working on technology to try to simulate their powers. You know, even though when they first got their powers, it was an accident and they weren't seeking out their abilities, now that they have adventured as the Fantastic Four, and they have villains, their lives will be in danger if it gets out that they don't have their powers anymore because they have enemies. So they test out, Reed's having them test out the stuff that he's come up with so far. He's got a harness, or like a special suit for Sue wear. Interesting, like he doesn't have a thing suit. He has a thing robot that he wants Ben to learn to control, to operate. And then Johnny's suit is really weird. It's all green with these circles all over it. It's got a hood and just black ovals for his eyes. When he's not flamed on, he looks like pretty bizarre. But he's the first one that tests out his suit. And he flames on and like pretty well. When he does, he looks like he used to. And he tries flying, and he starts to fly, but it gets kind of wobbly, and he has trouble staying up, and he ends up falling, and his flames go out. Ben, he's not an inventor like Reed. He's not, so he has some difficulty getting used to using this big kind of remote control looking thing to operate the thing robot. He's like, you know what? Ben gets frustrated pretty easily and tells him, why don't you do this? You're the one that invented it. Why don't you control the thing? He's like, no, it's got to be you. You're the one that knows what the thing would do in a particular circumstance. It's got to be you. But Ben's not very optimistic about getting used to it. And similarly, Sue tries out her new suit, and she kind of gets it, but kind of doesn't. But they're just in a difficult circumstance without their powers. So then we switch scenes to Latveria, where Dr. Doom is finding himself not very entertained by a hypnotist that is trying to put on a show for him, like a good king would have done. And so this magician says, "Well, I'll try to hypnotize you." And he said, "Yeah, such a petty talent could not impress Dr. Doom, the man who defeated the Fantastic Four." But when the magician goes to hypnotize him, he says, "Your Excellency, you're actually already under a hypnotic spell. I can remove that." And this goes back to Fantastic Four Annual number 2, when Reed tricked Dr. Doom into thinking through hypnosis that he had defeated the Fantastic Four so he would be satisfied and no longer attack them. So obviously, Doom is quite pissed, and the magician doesn't know who he's talking to because he expects to be rewarded for this service. And Doom backhands him across the face and tells him he's lucky that he doesn't have him killed for knowing that Doom had been hypnotized. And from there, Doom takes off after. To head to America, to New York City. Meanwhile, Matt Murdock shows up at the Fantastic Four's headquarters. Actually, no, actually, he shows up at a warehouse because that's where the Fantastic Four has asked him to meet them. He had met them earlier on in Daredevil number 2. And has been operating as their lawyer. He discovers that the Fantastic Four are still working on this these new inventions that Reed has come up with to simulate their powers. And they think he's just a normal blind man, so they don't think he's seeing as much as he is actually seeing. And Reed basically, he's basically just setting up power of attorney and wanting to make sure that if something happens to them, knowing that, you know, their lives are in danger, that that his scientific work and everything like that is going to be given to the government, and that the charitable organizations that they've set up will be continued. And Matt says, yeah, of course I can do that. Is there some kind of trouble you guys are in that I can possibly help with? And just then there's an explosion as Doom attacks. So the Fantastic Four try to deal with a wall that's collapsing, and Matt sneaks away and puts on his Daredevil costume. He comes back just in time to save the save the Human Torch as he gets knocked, his flames go out. So from there, basically the Daredevil acts as the protector of the Fantastic Four, while they were at the warehouse, Dr. Doom has infiltrated the Baxter Building and has taken over most of Reed's stuff, starting out with the Fantastic Car, which he operates by remote control, and breaks it out into its component pieces and sends them at the team. So yeah, there's a lot of Daredevil. Naturally, you know, the four of them are used to battle and have good reflexes and stuff like that, but Daredevil's the one that prevents them or helps them to get through close calls. What the heck?
What happened?
Digital. Okay, here we go.
did you get the black screen?
Yeah, my digital life is failing me here.
Yeah. No, that happens. You can't explain it. Sometimes you have to go into that mode where you can see all the pages and then turn to it. That's what I don't know. I think it's an app problem or something.
Yeah, I had to close the comic and then open it up again. It seems like it's fine now, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, thought I was going to have to rely on my memory.
That's what I did for Brave and the Bold. I relied on my memory because I don't like to. That's one thing when you're reviewing a book. I cannot get myself to review it digitally. Like if you're looking at it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whatever page by page and not having been able to like turn to page 9 immediately. You have to do at least 3 clicks.
Daredevil works to protect the Fantastic Four. While Doom is the next invention of Reed's that he makes use of is called a supersonic air displacer vortex machine. Basically it seems to create like tornadoes or hurricanes rather. And he sends it after the FF, wrecking a lot of damage to the city on the way. Daredevil, or the vortex finally reaches the Fantastic Four, and Reed obviously still has his mind. He tells Daredevil, he directs Daredevil in a particular direction, and he knows that he knows the weaponry that's being used. And there's some gas cylinders that are used for accessory power, Reed says. Daredevil asks how that's going to help, and Reed just, his explanation isn't very detailed. He just kind of says that don't forget I created this. I know what it's made out of, and gas is the only element that's going to shatter it. So Daredevil and Reed start throwing the gas cylinders at the machine, and it works. They have to take the brunt of the explosion and let their bodies go limp, so they don't break anything. And but they are able to successfully destroy the machine. By this point, Doom has realized that they keep fleeing instead of going on the offense with all the stuff that he's throwing at them. And he's not familiar with Daredevil, but he realizes that Daredevil has basically been the one that's sort of taking the lead. And from this information, he surmises the fact that the Fantastic Four don't have their powers. So he decides that he's going to try to pick them off individually. Because they've been separated by this point, apart from Daredevil and Reed being together, the next thing he sends up at them is this force beam projectile, which Reed and Daredevil have to deal with. At this point, after they deal with that, Daredevil says, I'm going to make Doom, I'm going to basically draw Doom's fire so that you guys can have a better chance of making it back to your headquarters and dealing with him there. So Daredevil makes himself a target while Reed starts trying to sneak his way back to the headquarters. We also have a panel where we check in with Ben Grimm and who's hiding out on the street, also trying to make his way back. And Sue and Johnny are in a car, hoping that they'll be Doom won't be able to pick them out amongst all the other traffic. So basically, it ends on a cliffhanger with Daredevil distracting Doom and the four in separate groups making their way back to the Baxter Building to battle Doom out. But yeah, overall, I just thought it was just a really well done issue. You can see that Stan and Jack really know this team by this point. It's been the longest running of their stuff, and I thought the use of Daredevil was really cool, and a neat scenario that they had set up with Doom being in the Baxter Building and having control of their equipment and them having to deal with not having any powers and stuff for the first time. I mean, I know it's something that's kind of become cliche at this point, but it feels pretty fresh here. The only thing that, if I had criticized anything about it, it's just that, I know that the whole, secret identity thing is something that, in comic books, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief. But in this particular case, it's kind of hard to do, given Reed's intelligence and the fact that Matt was just there and, Daredevil shows up. He displays certain scenarios throughout the issue. He displays an ability to navigate circumstances where there's a lot of smoke or something like that. And none of them can see, they remark on the fact that Daredevil is able to lead them through, as if he can somehow see. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just super, it's just asking a bit too much to suggest that Reed would not have pretty quickly figured out that Daredevil was Matt Murdock. But other than that, though, I thought it was a really excellent issue. And that even that is the kind of thing that you just kind of have to overlook with a comic that's this, you know, from the 60s.
Well, there's a lot going on too. Maybe Reed can't focus on that. I mean,
like, yeah,
he's got all other stuff going on that he's focused on.
Yeah, there's different explanations you can come up with. Like
Reed's very one track mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's smart as hell, but he's very a man of whatever he's thinking about.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably the best.
He doesn't get distracted.
Explain it. Mm-hmm. Right. True. But yeah, it's a really
then,
good issue.
Back then, Sue wasn't as like she was is today. She's real observant now.
Yeah.
She wasn't written that way originally.
Yeah, I did think it was cool in the previous issue though that it was her force field that protects them from the nuclear blast. You know.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, a lot of times people talk about her as if she really never really did much at all back in the Stan and Jack era. And
yeah,
she kind of starts out that way, but they do amplify her powers even within their own time on the book.
Mm-hmm.
But
to me, she's always, I mean, the era that I read her in most, she was the most powerful member.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind
she's
of...
She's the smartest, I think, from a different perspective. She's not smarter than Reed, like, to build something or engineer something, but she's, like, smarter to lead. Like, just to...
Yeah.
Know what's going on, because Reed is very... He's like the anti-ADD. Like, he doesn't get distracted.
She's more well-rounded.
She's more well-rounded, yeah.
Yeah, and a better leader, I would say, too.
Yeah. The FF are coming back, finally.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see that. I think there should always be a FF book.
Yeah.
I knew it would happen eventually, but...
Well, there's been kind of like an FF book for the last 2 years. It's just been Johnny and... Ben, I mean,
right.
Bendis has been doing it, and the infamous Iron Man that has Dr. Doom and them two, plus the evil Reed Richards.
Yeah.
And then they have Marvel 2-in-1, which I haven't started reading yet, but they've been around, and they've been in character. Like Ben, when he was in the Avengers, I would say he's still like you could still tell it's Ben. And Johnny, yeah. When he was in the Inhumans and with Medusa, he was definitely Johnny. So, mm-hmm. I think they've been in character as far as you never lose, like, who they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird not having the whole family. And
yeah.
Valeria and Franklin. And I'm excited that they're coming back. I'm interested to see what Dan Slott will do, because I wasn't mm-hmm. crazy about his Silver Surfer.
Right.
But I like his Spider-Man, so we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I hope people like it, just because
yeah.
I think there should be an FF book. So I know the artist, Sarah Pacelli, I think it is. She's good.
She's done Spider-Man a lot.
Yeah.
The Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it should be good. They do have a feel right now that they're going back. It's almost like a minor rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're going back to what the core values of the Marvel Universe is.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cap is Cap and Hulk is now Hulk and They're heading in that direction. History will
yeah.
repeat itself.
Yeah, it's
and then it'll cycle back and be changed and.
Yeah, I mean that's the only way like they can keep this stuff going for year
yeah.
after year after year after year after year. You know, it's a cycle because they have to change things up
yep.
and then change it back and then change it up and change it back and. You know.
Well, my last book will be quick. It's Judge Dredd number 2. It's the second appearance of Judge Dredd in America. around this time, Eagle Comics brought the 2001 stuff to America. And they launched with Judge Dredd. They had a bunch of comics. As a matter of fact, I'm working on filling it. This last procurement, I completed this run of Judge Dredd and started to complete the second one when they switched from Eagle to Quality. And there's still a few of the Eagle that I have to finish collecting, but I've almost got everything. So this one's amazing. Like, I love these stories because they're so, man, they're, what are they, like 8 pages each? John Wagner's on the script and Brian Bolan is on the art. And the first one's called Oxygen Board. And this is really cool because they're not in Mega City 1. They're on Luna 1, which is the moon. And there's this ship that docks, and it boards and it loads oxygen onto the place where people are living. Well, some hijackers hijack that oxygen ship and they load it with knockout gas, essentially, that makes them sleepy, trank gas. So they trank everybody out, and then they go down there and they rob everything, except the judges have masks that allow breathing apparatus. So they're actually able to stop these guys. And they do end up dying with what they were trying to steal. That's the irony of the situation, is there's a robot on board and he actually kills them with their loot because they didn't pay their oxygen bill and they have all this money. They said, "You're late on your oxygen bill and I have to shut it off. When you pay your bill, I'll shut it back on." So all the criminals that stole the tranked everybody actually died because of lack of oxygen. The second story is by the same creative team. It's called the Lunar Olympics, and it's the Russians versus Luna 1 in the Olympic Games. And what it turns out to be is on the last event, it's like tied, and on the last event, somebody dies and the Russians blame us, so it actually turns into a war. And instead of having a war, they say, "We'll just select 4 of our best athletes or players and you select 4 of yours and we'll have a competition, and whoever wins will claim the property. Like, you'll get part of Russia or they'll get part of Luna 1. And Judge Dredd knocks out one of the guys and joins the Luna 1 team, and they're able to defeat the Russians. So that was that story, and that's what the cover has to do with, is the Olympic Games. The next one is like a Western. If you ever watch like Westerns in the old frontier where property is given, they would open up an area of property and then everybody would be on their horses and they'd like claim your stake, right? They'd have to drive their stake in the ground. Well, they opened up some land on Luna 1 and let all these people go grab their land. And one of the stories goes around one of the... So nothing's really just. Like, this guy drives a stake in the ground, says, "I got the land." And then somebody kills him and says, "Owner deceased. We'll go up for auction now." It's like, shit. And then this old lady... She got some land, and these people, these developers, capture her, and they want her to sign over her property, but Judge Dredd actually stops that from happening. And then the final story is called The Face Change Crimes, and this one's cool because it has some of my favorites. It's got Laurel and Hardy and Charlie Chaplin and the Marx Brothers. But it starts off with Laurel and Hardy and Charlie Chaplin robbing a bank, and they change their faces. So they can't tell, like, when the judges arrive, they're looking for Laurel and Hardy and Charlie Chaplin, and they change their face because they have this device that will change their face. And then now they're the Marx Brothers, so they actually walk out with all the money as the Marx Brothers. And but later on, the irony of the story is Judge Dredd switches his face and goes undercover as one of them, and they admit to their crime, and he arrests them, so... It was really cool. It's amazing how they could tell like so much in so little. Like in comics today, these 8-page stories might be 4 issues. And these comics were just 8 pages, so they were real effective with their use of the page. And Brian Bolland's awesome. I mean, he's an awesome
Yeah,
artist.
definitely. That one of those with those DC closeout sales, the Ollie's Bargain Outlets that people were going to and getting stuff. I've talked about it before. I mostly got Showcase Presents at those, but I did grab that Art of Brian Boland hardcover that DC put out there. Which is really cool to flip through. It's got all those covers and stuff that he has done for DC. I
Yeah,
really
he's
like his
done, and
work.
those tend to be valuable, like if you have his Wonder Woman covers, or he's done a lot of covers. And
Yeah,
I mean,
his
his
Wonder
most
Woman
famous
ones
is
are.
probably the Killing Joke, but I mean, he's done so many of them.
Yeah, his Wonder Woman ones are the more expensive issues of that volume because of his covers, as far as I know.
And his
So.
art, like his sequential art, isn't as like it isn't as detailed as his cover art. Like he's good and he's awesome, but he's not like his covers really stand out.
Yeah, I think it would just take ages
Yeah,
for
if he
the
had that level of
sequential.
detail and sequential. So yeah, I like this book, and I have another handful that I need to read because I just completed this run, so I thought it was a good opportunity to read it, and I knew it would be a fast story, because that's what I liked about Judge Dredd back in the day, is they had like these really ridiculous concepts, and they would do them in short. It's like that romance comic. That romance comic had 4 stories, just like this one, except it had a lot more pages because of in the Golden Age they had a lot. They were a lot thicker,
Yeah.
so they were more like 12 pages each, and dense because the dialogue in those are like. They're way more dense than what was in Judge Dredd. So it took me a long time to read Heartthrobs, but not as much to read Judge Dredd. But I've been bringing up Marvel a lot lately, so I wanted to change it up. So I like picked 2 DC and
It's
an Eagle just to change up, because I've been on that Marvel kick, and a lot of the old stuff I'm reading is Marvel Unlimited.
Good that you did, since I just went all Marvel 60s stuff.
I like though when they do the Ben thing in the android or the suit. I like when he becomes Ben sometimes.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one that really wants to lose his ability. He
Right.
doesn't want to be a monster anymore.
No, I mean, yeah. Who can blame him? And it works because he still has a big part of that character is his personality. And he still has the same personality.
Yep, he does.
So.
Johnny has a hard time without his powers because he's always showboating and stuff, and he's lost his
Yeah.
powers in the past, and he has a really hard time
He doesn't know what to do with himself.
surviving. Yeah, because I was reading, I don't know if you ever read this, but it is on Marvel Unlimited, and it's worthwhile just from an historical perspective. If you start reading 4, did you ever read that? It was the Marvel Knights,
Oh, yeah. I read
Fantastic
some of it when
Four.
it was coming out.
That's very interesting because they lost the whole concept of that is they lost all their money. Like they're
Oh,
not
yeah, that's right.
financially viable anymore. And Johnny doesn't know how to deal with it. And it has the marital like angst between, because one of the things about marriage too is money's involved, right? Money can stress you out if you don't have it. Well, that makes Reed and Sue like almost go in different directions. Like she becomes a teacher, but she's so mad at Reed for just like focusing on things, but he could get a job.
Right,
He
yeah.
finally does, but he gets distracted so easy. Like he wants to do his own thing. He can't be like a computer tech for a company because he's got so much other shit on his mind.
Right, yeah, the difficulties of.
Yeah. I gotta finish reading that. I think I got like 12 issues in and haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, I didn't read all of it, but I remember when it, I read a bunch of it when it first came out.
Next time, I think what I'm gonna do to mix it up is I think I'm gonna try to watch something like old. I don't know
Yeah, that's
what
always
yet,
cool.
but I have a lot of old DVDs.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. All right, well, we can wrap this one up. You enjoy the rest of your Sunday,
You too.
and you can reach us on the Twitters at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, at Rob Krieger.
Yeah, you can see Mike's making some controversial statements out there on Twitter today.
Yeah, they're all controversial. Only
Making
two,
some.
only the comic book stuff is the truth.
That you're quitting them?
No, I'm not quitting the comics. Only the
Novels
when
and
I
tea.
post on what I read, that's it.
What about what's with tea?
I'm gonna drink tea.
What's why is that a joke?
I don't know.
You got something against tea?
No, I drank tea yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I'm just switching gears.
You're just gonna put your pinky out
No,
while you're
I'm gonna
doing it?
drink. I'm gonna drink hot tea with my pinky in the air.
Oh, you
And my
drink cold tea
slippers.
normally.
Yeah, I just drink cold tea. I don't drink hot tea.
I drink hot tea all the time.
Yeah, with your pinky in the air.
And with slip, I got slippers on too.
Yeah. I knew it. You're probably reading a novel.
I am not right now while we're talking, but yeah, I am currently reading one.
What are you reading?
It's called The Birth of Venus.
Yeah.
It's a historical novel. It takes place in Italy during the Renaissance.
Really? It's an interesting title.
Yeah, I got interested. I'm interested in Renaissance Italy right now
It's
for
like
whatever reason.
Leonardo da Vinci stuff or what? What do you.
Well, it's around that era. It's kind of a little bit before Da Vinci, but it's about a young girl who doesn't really fit conform to the like gender roles of the society. She wants to be an artist, but women aren't encouraged to do that, you know? And so she kind of comes up against the expectations that, you know, 'cause she has to get married through an arranged marriage. And but I like it's interesting because it takes place at an interesting time. It takes place in Florence, Italy, and it takes place at an interesting time in Florence, Italy, like in the late 1400s,
Yeah.
when Lorenzo Medici, who's like the last of the Medici family to really like be a strong ruler, who was like real big patron of the arts in Florence, was like thought to be like the new Athens, you know, like all this like great art and culture and stuff like that. And then there was this monk Savonarola who starts preaching like fire and brimstone from the pulpit and like encouraging like to all this artwork to be destroyed and stuff. And when L Lorenzo Medici dies, his son is not like a very strong ruler, and France is looking to occupy Italy. And
Is this all historical?
yeah,
Like,
that stuff's all historical. And
no,
so
but
like that's the
is it? Could you say it's historical fiction though? Like some of the characters are fiction, or is it all historical?
It's historical fiction, so like that stuff I was just talking about is like
It's
the
all
historic,
legit, yeah.
is legit, like that's the environment, like the background that takes
Yeah.
place in, and then like the fictional part of it is like the main character and like her life. And but like I like the historical context, because they'll like talk about different like artists and architecture, because the main
Yeah.
character is like is interested in art and like secretly does art, even though like she's discouraged by her family and stuff, because she's a girl.
Yeah.
So she has to like do her drawings in secret and stuff. Don't know,
Cool
I'm about
deal.
halfway through. It's pretty good, you know. But
I'm reading a
anyway.
book, but I haven't gotten very far. I'm only 60 pages in, and then I get distracted. I'm still
Did you read
reading
much of the
Joyride.
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Stephen King, like he did a couple for that line, but I think like I don't know if those will be your best example of like the hard case crime feel.
Well, this one has a good hard case crime because somebody is mur was murdered at the they're like at one of those amusement parks that just exists in the summertime, like near the
Okay.
beach. And it is pretty good because it gives you all like he's really good at like detailing like everything that goes on, the whole culture. The language the carnies use, you know, like it's interesting.
Gotcha.
I like it. It just it's hard for me to switch gears from a comic book.
Yeah.
Not because it's not good. It's just because I have so much in front of me, I get distracted. I'm not Reed
Right.
Richards. I'm not very focused.
Yeah.
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 All right, well, you have a good one, and I guess we'll try again when see if Rob, I don't know, I think he's going to the Disney World. But
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think he said like the 23rd was be the first time he'd be available, so we'll
Yeah,
see
it's
how it
pretty far
goes.
out, yeah. All right, well, thanks for recording with me, and we'll
Yeah.
talk to you soon.
All right.
All right, bye.
Sounds good. Bye.